This is Eco Radio KC, a locally produced exploration of positive solutions to the ecological challenges we face as we work to create a healthier future for our community and the planet.
You're tuned to 90.1 FM KKFI Kansas City Community Radio. Good evening and welcome to Eco Radio KC. We have a few things to mention in the news, and then we're going to turn it over to Richard Mabian, talking about some of the stories of the past year, and he's got some other news coming up. Parents outraged over Radio Disney's participation in the pro-fracking educational tour. And so they're saying that, this is from EcoWatch, if Radio Disney is going to engage kids around energy, it should be promoting renewable energy that is safe and climate safe. Kids safe and climate safe, not fossil fuel energy that puts them in harm's way. And also, Neil Young is going on tour this week in Canada along with Diana Krall. To support the Athabasca Chipewyan First Nations legal battle with the tar sands. And so he's got a series of dates this week, ending on the 19th, which is, I think, is Sunday, all in Canada, all to raise funds for the Legal Defense Fund. And also in Eco News, of course, the big story, water supply for 300,000 plus contaminated by West Virginia coal chemical spill. And the spill, according to the Sierra Club report, the spill, which occurred at a Freedom Industries storage facility, involved a 48,000-gallon tank of a chemical used to treat coal before it's sent off to be burned at coal-fired power plants. The chemical called 4-methylcyclohexene methanol may seriously impact the health and safety of local residents with symptoms including vomiting, skin blistering, and burns in the throat. Residents in 9 counties have been advised not to use the water for any purpose other than flushing. And then there was another story coming out of that same region that Walmart was calling in the police to protect them, unload their bottled water shipment because of concerns on that. And one other story that European Union bureaucrats have criticized for double standards on GMO safety studies. The controversy about the Seralini et al. Study, which reported negative health effects of Monsanto's NK603 GM, genetically modified maize, and Roundup herbicide fed to rats over the long term is still going on. According to a new review published in Environmental Sciences Europe, the European Food Safety Authority used unscientific double standards to dismiss the Seralini study on genetically modified maize. And that's about it. And so I'd like to welcome Mr. Richard Mabian.
Good evening, everyone. As you said, this is me again. Glad to be here. Happy New Year's. I think this is my first show for the New Year's. The last one was on the 30th, wasn't it?
That's right.
All right, my first show for the New Year. I'm glad to be here. I was telling Mike when I got here, this is really an exciting time to be alive, to be an American. It can be disappointing. It can be distasteful. It can be heartbreaking. But at the same time, there are some good things happening. You may have to search for it, but there are some good things happening. I personally, because I guess the nature of what I do, have a chance to be around some of those good things that's happening. You heard Mike just talking about those problems over there in West Virginia. That is like what I point out as being a part of our magic American tragedy. And, of course, that stuff is going to happen. I'm just glad now that when we do receive information about it, people aren't so reluctant to deal with it. Sometimes, you know, that kind of information you just let pass on by you, oh, that don't have anything to do with us. That's them people over there on the East Coast. But you start realizing what's happening there with them could very easily happen with you folks. You know, it could very, very easily happen with each and every one of us at any given time, as long as we're working in these environments with corporation and industry. Industry who hires us, who pays our bills, who helps us to maintain a lifestyle, is using the type of chemicals that on any given day it could have a spill and end up causing the kind of problems they're having in West Virginia. That's just something for us all to keep in mind. You know, I need to make a living too, just like everybody else. But sometimes we don't think about the fact that of mess that I'm moving out and storing over in this particular place at a job is a vat of mess that under certain circumstances could be detriment to my own health. That's what we're up against. So I'm looking forward to us this year. Education is the name of my game all year long. I'm going to push it as heavy as I can. Before I get into it, I want to get the little lighter side out of the way. Russ Limbaugh, I'm sitting there looking at a little flyer I put together. It's got Russ Limbaugh's name picture on it and Al Roper's picture on it. And it has to do with Al Roper telling Russ Limbaugh to shove it. Because Russ Limbaugh said that what name did they? The polar vortex. The polar vortex was a made-up liberal word that they used just to be able to try to make folks think that we don't have, that we have global warming.
All right.
So it evidently, when Al Roper heard about it, he went and dug out some report from 1989.
It was his 59. College textbook he pulled out. It was something in his college textbook.
Okay, something in his college textbook from 1959. That had the definition of this polar vortex. So he's letting him know that this is a lie. And this is Al Roper. I mean, I haven't seen his environmental credentials. I think that was just his professional credentials from being insulted.
I think
that,
so
that
too.
They would use him, that the environmental folks would use him in such a way that he would make up something and stand up and sell it to the American public. So I thought that was kind of a humorous thing. I'm going to keep this flyer I made up with Rush Limbaugh and Al Roper's picture on it at the same time. That's one heck of a combination. And then there was something else that went along with that feed on the internet that said, don't just hush Rush, flush him. And they got a picture of a toilet stool on there, Rush being flushed down the toilet stool. So I wanted to get that humorous thing out of the way. You know, there's a couple of meetings that I want to bring to your attention. One of them is the one that I had the two people on with me the last time I was on, Maurice Copeland. Maurice, if you're out there, give me a call, buddy, so I can have you say a few words about your meeting, which is tomorrow. It's going to be held at the IBEW Hall, and that's on 103rd Street. And there's one session, it looks like, that's going on at 10 a.m. in the morning, and another section is going on at 6 p.m. in the evening. I'm tied up both of them times, so I may be able to get out to that 10 a.m. one, but in the evening I know I can't get there. But any of you folks over here that heard the show the last time, I want to know more about it. It has to do with his whistleblowing out there at Bannister and at the Honeywell. And getting ready for a team of government folks that are coming in town to make some kind of determination over whether they're going to could declare that site out there a site where people are capable of receiving some kind of remuneration for the suffering that occurred and is still occurring. So that goes on tomorrow. I don't know for sure if we have anything on our website or if it was some way maybe we can put this information, Mike, just to IBEW Hall out there at 103rd. in Holmes, I believe it is. Isn't it something like that? It's a 301 West 103rd Street. And the meeting time will be from 10 a.m. to 6 a.m. And, again, Maurice, if you're out there, give me a call so you can get whatever pertinent information we need to have about it. The other meeting that the guy was on the air with me was Sierra Club. He called in from St. Louis. They were having a conversation, a energy conversation in Independence. It was a new idea they wanted to try, and that happened on Saturday, January the 11th. Unfortunately, again, due to the weather circumstances, Fuscari, for those of you who didn't know it, is my better half, playing. She was in Atlanta with the grandbabies over Christmas. Had to be rerouted because of weather and storms and stuff in Atlanta. So instead of her getting in when she's supposed to, she didn't get in until like after 10. And that's when the meeting in Independence started. So I didn't get a chance to go. But I got the people who was there to give me some kind of information on basically how it went. And he says on here, 110 people showed up for the panel discussion. I am just totally impressed. You people did it out there, and not only from the Independence area, because I'm sure some of you came from the Kansas City, Missouri area, and I just want to say, go, guys. I really appreciate that. That's what this is all about. 110 people showed up. There was standing room only. You know, he said, this is a great sign that folks are very interested in this issue in Independence. There was a healthy debate and discussion on the future of energy production and the use in Independence, including retiring coal use at the two plants and the public health, environment, and job creation benefits of clean energy options such as wind power. However, he went ahead to let me know. He used the term healthy debate above because there were several IBEW workers who showed up and made it more debate. Now, so I had him give me a call right before I went on the air when I was driving over here to get some kind of understanding. When he said IBEW workers causing some confusion, was kind of not confusion, but making a debate out of it, the first person that came to my mind was my friend Maurice. I thought Maurice had made the meeting. So I said, oh, Lord, what did Maurice do? Because he didn't say anything else. So I wrote him back and asked him, was there any people of color in that group? And I put a call in. Maurice told him to call me. I haven't heard from him yet. So when he talked to me on the phone, the first thing he said to me, there were no, and I'm going to repeat, no persons of color at the meeting. I know people don't want to accept this fact, but I'm bringing it to you and will continue to bring it to you. That is all of our fault. We are going to have to make sure that we're making a multicultural presentation. We're going to have to, 110 people, somebody in that group got to have a black friend. We got to make sure that we're getting some people sitting in the meetings, man. Now, Richard Mabian can't do it all. Y'all know I'm pushing the lever every day. I'm having a meeting with EPA next week. And I have a great concern because I'm feeling like this. There's no way in the world that our environmental agency should be allowing us to have meetings of those natures. We're talking about clean energy. We're talking about clean air. We're talking one of Obama's main policies that he passed that we're trying to enforce. And we don't have any help getting people of color there. All right, that's just, you know, you got to have at least one commentary from Richard. You'll probably get a couple more before I get off the air, but that's my first one. To back it up, a group in Kansas City, Kansas, are very upset about their utility bills. In fact, my brother, not even knowing this group, called an emergency meeting Saturday and invited me because of my ties to the Sierra Club and BPU over in Kansas City, Kansas. They called me to this meeting, and I went, and I was very impressed with these 8 to 10 people who were there because they were there because they are sick and tired of the rate hikes and paying items, line items, on their bill that they have no idea what they stand for. They've even got to the point they don't even spell out the whole word. They just put the little letters on there. ERT, ABC, you know, and you, and people, my brother said he looked at his bill for his utilities, for his electric use and his water use. It was something like about $50, $60. But then when they started adding in all of these other items, extra this and hoop for that and this for that, he ends up having a $150 utility bill. That's ridiculous. The point about it, none of these people knew what those things stayed for. And like I was telling Mike a while ago, this is your working class population. We're not talking about those folks living in them neighborhoods and not working and don't want to do nothing to begin with. We're talking about people who can suffer some consequences, maybe a loss of a job or a sickness in the family that hurts their income and making it difficult for them to be able to pay their bills. These folks are the ones that are starting to now pay attention to where their dollars are going. That is empowerment. I couldn't wait to call Craig Valor, my Sierra Club comrade, to tell him, man, that's what we've been working to see people. There was not an organization in this town responsible for those people coming together. But those people need organization support now that they want to do something. They're planning on holding a town hall meeting in March, and they want to get as many as 300 people out there so they can sit down and start educating themselves and getting education on what it is they're actually dealing with. Now, that's what it's supposed to be about. So what's the first thing they go? We don't want this to be an all-black circumstance. Hey, listen to me now. We don't want this to be an all-black circumstance. In other words, the people planning it said that. They turn and they, first thing they want, we want to know how we can reach out to our Hispanic brothers and sisters, our white brothers and sisters. So when we do this, we're not just talking about something that's happening to black folks that they can just push aside and go on about their business. We want to be able to have us a town hall meeting where we as Wyandotte County residents come together and say, we've had enough. What is it we need to do to make this thing right? If it's a policy, then let's talk about policies. So I'm just saying that's what I like to see happen. That's what I wish it happened out there in Independence. I'm not blaming anybody, please. I don't want anyone to take that's what I'm saying. I'm just, as a person who does what I do, I'm going to make that an agenda item all this month. My whole reason for forming a conference was because of lack of people of color. Now I'm doing more. But I'm still going to make that an issue. We have to find ways to get you to help me, to help get my black brothers and sisters involved in the front side of a process and not always being concerned on the back side when they cut off their stuff and they can't get it turned back on. No, that's conversation two. I said I was only going to have one. I had two. There's another thing going on. Anthony, if you over there listening on the phone, I just told you about the one meeting they had over there. They held it at Gates on 10th and State, so that's probably right in your neighborhood. And they're going to hold a follow-up meeting on the 25th of January. Again, I say to you, find some way to make contact with me. Call the station, leave your number, leave your name. Call me, we'll talk. You want me to give you my number now? I'll give it to you. It's 913-481-9920. Call me, we'll talk. I'd like to see you get involved with us in some stuff. I'd like to see you be a part of this meeting, part of this group. I'm also going to talk to the people that's coming on the air. I've already called them after we are off, the Hispanic group, my Hispanic representatives, because we want them there, and we want this issue to be discussed on their station. We have to educate ourselves, and I love the fact that it's people educating each other. So, again, that's another little announcement for you. The next thing, I didn't talk about it last time, but the EPA held that listening session. You know, that's where they come in and listen to you talk. And they held that one where we all showed up, about 400 people. Well, they had a follow-up to that at the beginning of December. and they invited probably about 10 of us out there. I lucked out and got there because of a guy from St. Louis, or there would have been, listening to an EPA, no person of color sitting at that table. But because the white guy in St. Louis saw a need for a person of color to be there, he invited me from St. Louis to my own hometown in Kansas City, Lenexa. I'll tell you, it's something that's just not right about that, is it? But anyhow, that session was very informative, because since the first listening session, they have been going around to the utility companies, meeting with your state utility companies. And this has to do with the reduction of energy use. Hey, I didn't throw no phone number out there, people. I'm sorry. You know you can call and talk to me, 816-931-5534. 816-931-5534. Call and talk to me. If you got something you want to talk about, this show tonight is up for that, long as you're not take up all my time so that other folks can't call or I can't finish saying what I want to say. So the line's open, okay? But on this listening session, what was interested in there was what it's really all about. A couple of questions got to be asked. What is the percentage of reduction that that they're asking for? And they're going with what Obama put in his bill in 2007. And in that bill, it said that they wanted a 17% reduction pollution is coming from the plants. And so when they dealt with the plants on them, I asked them, did the plants feel that that was doable? And he said the plants have said that right now they feel that as a general rule, they're capable of getting between 2 to 5% of that 17% reduced inside the fence line. That's important to hear. Inside the fence line. That's where the plant is. Right now, the average of most plants is between 1 and 2% reduction in their emissions, since that's what they've been able to accomplish so far. Okay, now for the rest of that percentage to be taken care of, they are saying that they will, if they were doing it outside the fence line. In other words, they're going to be, that means they'll be working in the neighborhoods. Okay, so if they're working in the neighborhoods, that means us. Well, they put us in with resident, commercial, and industrial. Needless to say, you can imagine who they're going to give their attention to. It's going to be business and industrial and commercial more than residents. So what we're doing is we're going to push the lever to make sure that they include the residents in that equation. And the one way you include the residents is by having more energy efficiency education. I can't get nowhere in the world we will to get them to say, hey, we're going to reduce our emissions by 50%. That's unrealistic, and that's not what we're talking about. I will accept the 17% if you tell me that's a doable amount and can make a difference in the air that we breathe. But I also want to make sure that once you get past your little 2 to 5% inside the fence line and decide you're going to do your other 10% outside the fence line, that a certain portion of that is being dealt with in your low-income communities, folks. Because those are the communities that are suffering the biggest consequence of the pollution that's coming from our coal-fired plants. So that was what that was about. In fact, I wrote an article on it, my first one, I think, that got produced in the Kansas Planet magazine. I'm really excited about that because they send me something to hand them out in my meetings and presentations. I might just walk around with them like they're candy and hand it to folks. I'll fold it back on my page. I just gave Mike one when I came in here a while ago. But those were the issues that I was prepared to talk about when we came in the door. Now, while I'm waiting to see if anyone calls, the deal I wanted to use for the show was to talk about a profile that was just recently completed here in Kansas City, Kansas, in the state of Missouri, in the metropolitan area. Is that someone might? All right, we got a caller. Caller, you online? Will you give me your first name, the part of the city you're calling from, please?
Hi, my name is Kevin, and I'm from Kansas City.
Yes, sir. What can I do for you, Kevin?
So, I was kind of just tuned in real quick, and I wanted to know what this show is about. Because I actually have an economics radio show that I do every Friday for UMKC, and I'm just kind of like, oh, it sounds like this guy's talking about economics.
Yes. Well, we're talking about the environment, but economics, I'm a person that believes that that economics is a major part of the environment. In fact, are you over there with Michael Fisk? Do you know him at UMKC?
I named it the ring of bell. I'm just beginning my, studies in economics.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, he's a professor over at UMKC, and I had him on the air because he's a staunch not advocate of feeling that environmental programs and issues should have an economic base. And I'm in total agreement to that. In fact, I plan on having some shows like that going into this year. Now, to tell you about Eco Radio, we're just what this says. We're a radio show the only radio show that I know in this part of the country that actually for an hour a week sit down and address some environmental issues or circumstances. And we have a series of hosts. It's kind of like a magazine show. We have anywhere from 3 to 4 people who are engaged that are on at different times. And we each have different topics that we bring in. Sometimes we have 2 or 3 different things in a week. Sometimes we have one. And then like I'm doing right now, it's just kind of a wrap up for people to call in and we can talk to each other. A lot of times people call in. I'm surprised. Because I've been running my mouth a lot, and that happens. That happens sometimes because there were some things I wanted to make sure got shared. There's a lot going on, and I want people to be aware of what's going on and understand what I see as being each of our responsibility.
And what days do you do this show?
It's every Monday from 6 to 7.
Because, today I haven't really heard much, but it just piqued my interest.
That's well.
And I'm available during these times. I'm actually in the parking lot of Pizza Hut. I'm getting ready to pick up a pizza.
Yeah.
But, I thought it was very interesting, and I, would love to kind of, call in frequently and just kind of listen in on the show and maybe even, talk about some of the things you talk about on your show, on my show.
Okay, I like that. So you have a show?
Yeah, it's student radio, so it's not streaming on the radio.
Yeah, but it's we're over at UMKC?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, well, then we need to talk. You take my name, and then maybe you and I can get together offline, okay?
Absolutely.
And we can follow up from there. So my name is Richard Mabion, M-A-B-I-O-N.
Perfect. My brother's name is Richard.
Oh, then you won't forget me that way.
I know. And my father.
Okay. What's your name? What's your name again?
My name is Kevin Woods.
Kevin Woods.
Okay. Kevin Woods with a K.
Gotcha. Okay, Kevin, I got you covered here. Get in touch with me through the station. You can go to Eco Radio online, and they have a website there, and you can leave your name, number, or whatever it is you need to do, and then I'll get it, and I'll get back to you, okay?
Kevin.
Perfect. I'm going to continue listening to the show while I eat my pizza.
Okay, hold on.
Kevin, I'd encourage you to go to the Eco Radio KC Facebook page, which is Eco Radio. Eco Radio being one word, it's space KC. And like us, and then, feel free to post on there. Okay?
Okay.
All right. Take care, sir. Thanks for calling. Okay, now, what I was starting to say, Kansas, the country had a equity profile done and compared, I think it was 150 different locations around the country. And that program was just recently released, and I got a copy of it. Mark, Mid-America Regional Council, of course, was involved in a lot of the work that was done. The organization in San Francisco was the one that put it together. And they go through a lot of different areas, like when you deal with your agenda of the things that they covered, you know, they deal with the demographics and they talk about what's happening as far as the where we rank. And I just thought I would just start on the pages. And remember, now you got the numbers, 816-931-5534. 816-931-5534. This first page I'm looking at, it talks about the race, ethnicity, and nationality, I guess is on there, 2010. And of course, you know, they have our figures, largest being white, and the percentage I don't see. That's kind of strange. But they guess the ISCO with Mexican, we have 119,000 in the metropolitan area. Other Latinos, we have 30,000 for a total of 150,000 Latinos in the area. Asian Indians, we have 12,000. Chinese Taiwanians, we have 7,000. Vietnamese, 6,000. Filipinos, 4,000. Koreans, 3,000. All other Asians, 9,000. Shows you how he's writing this up, huh? Okay, let me go down the page. The demographics in this, as far as the moderate, we're a moderately diverse region. Kansas City ranks 79th among the largest 150 metropolitan areas in diversity. Kansas City has a diversity rating of 0.090, making it more diverse than similar-sized metropolitan areas in the Midwest, including Indianapolis, which is 0.85, and Columbus, which is 0.82. So they have a little graph on there that you can see. I'm not mistaken, Mike, you're going to put this on the website, right?
Yeah, if you get it to me, we'll get it up on there.
Yeah, it's on your email.
All right. Well,
so he's gonna put the line on. He's gonna put the link to this profile on the website. He'll tell you which one. So which what was you gonna say?
Well, I was just gonna say it's time for us to take our break. But we could post it on the KKFI webpage and the Eco Radio Facebook page as well.
All right. Well, we're gonna take a break and we'll be right back with you. This is Richard Mabee and the KKFI.
How the mainstream media is portraying the 50th anniversary of the War on Poverty, as well as the legalization of marijuana, on Counterspin, Tuesday at 6:30, right after Mic Check.
So George Orwell was off by 30 years. Big Brother is watching you now, and he's pretty bored. Hey, this is your old pal Mike Murphy, inviting you to join me on next Wednesday Morning Buzz from 6 to 8 a.m., as I play music from the year that was made iconic decades before it transpired. And I'd like you to call in and share your memories of 1984. Wednesday morning until 8 a.m.
The Raptor Recovery Center is an organization dedicated to the preservation of raptors. Bob Anderson, director of the Raptor Recovery Project, talks about the recently installed 24/7 webcams on the next Sprouts, Thursday at noon.
Okay, I'm back. While I was sitting there kind of looking at this report, waiting to pick up on it again when we got back, I started looking around, and you know, most of what it's talking about in this demographics has to do with the increase in the number of people of color who have moved into our community. And it says that Kansas City region has experienced a steady population growth since 1980, growing from 1.4 million to 1.9 million residents. In the same time period, the region's people of color population has grown from 16% to 27%. Most of the region's growth has come from people of color. 61% of the growth in 1990 and 67% of the growth in the 2000s. Latinos are leading the region's growth population. In the past decade, Kansas City Latino population grew 78%. And 72,000 residents. People of color are driving growth throughout the regions. Most of the region's county, Johnson County, Kay County, Platte County, Miami, experienced moderate population growth of 16 to 22% over the past decade. the populous counties, Jackson County, along with Ray and Leavenworth counties, grew more slowly. Wyandotte County population declined slightly. You know, I was at, when picked up folks from the airport the other day, of course, you know, me being at home by myself, there was no food in the house, dog food by the extent of it. So I had to stop at one of them old Walmart, Super Walmarts out there off of Berry Road on I-29. To grab something to take home, and when I got there, it didn't take me but a few seconds to start realizing how many people of color I saw. I know I grew up in the old school. You know, I graduated from Argentine High School in 1964, where you know, you didn't see a whole lot of people of color in certain parts of the city. And for the longest, even out in that part of the city, you just don't see a tremendous amount of people of color. But I was just totally amazed at how many people of color I saw at that daggum Super Walmart, at that shopping center. And in that whole complex out there, you know, they have all those shopping centers. I don't know if that means they're going from inner city Kansas City, Missouri, but I'm really thinking that there are more people of color starting to move in out there in North Kansas City. Interesting. People of color are driving growth in region. That same thing. They got pictures on there showing you stuff. You know, I had this on the growing racial generation gap. The region of color are more youthful than its white population. The region's communities of color are more youthful than its white population. Medium age by race, all is 36, whites 39, black 31, Latinos 26, Asian Pacific Islanders is 32, Native Americans and Alaska Natives are 25, and all other mixed races is 17. So it's still that medium age is running around in that 30. You know, people doing these surveys, there'd be one little gap, and they'd take it off from there. A growing racial generation gap. Kansas City's 21% point racial generation gap ranks 102nd among the largest 150 regions. Even though the gap more than doubles in the region since 1980, it still remains less than the national average of 26. You know, I kind of saw that when I was looking at those ages. Remember, I said they were all running right around the same in the 31, 32 for almost all those races that was listed on there. So I can see how you can see why they're saying, as far as our racial gap is concerned in the Kansas City metropolitan area, we kind of low. We're not like what's happening in some other cities where people probably are moving from Kansas City to these other cities. I'm sure we got a lot of young people moving to Colorado. So they go up there and experience a marijuana shop. I got a conference in Colorado, Denver, February, and I've already said as soon as I as an old easy rider hippie, as soon as I get off the plane, the first stop I want before I go to the hotel, I gotta go see a marijuana shop. I mean, I ain't going to be partaking, but I got to go see it. That would be a crime for me to go that far and not have a chance to actually walk in the shop.
Well, Richard, they said on Eco Radio KC that what happens in Colorado should stay in Colorado now.
you understand. Okay, economic vitality. The last guy that called in said that was what he talked about on his show. They even have that on here. It says wage growth for the bottom half of the workers since 1979 was 6%. Share of black and Latinos living in poverty is 26%. Wage gap between college-educated whites and people of color is $3.50 an hour. Economic risk. Again, it just, you know, it's not like there's some the devastating figures on here that would cause you just sit back and go, oh, wow, that's horrible. Everything is within what I consider to be a proximity of each other. So if we put this on the deal, increase in income equality, Kansas City ranks 104th among the largest 150 in terms of income inequality. Right in between Springfield, Missouri, 103rd, and Youngstown, Pennsylvania, 105, compared to other similar-sized metro in the Midwest. The level of inequalities in Kansas City slightly lower than Indianapolis, and again, much lower than Columbia. So again, we still hanging in there at pretty much the same level. Declining wages, stagnating wages for most workers. Oh, we got someone on the line. Caller, you're on the line. You're on the air. Will you give me your first name, part of the city you're calling from, please?
Richard, this is Kevin again.
Yes, sir.
So you started talking about something that I really felt like I should say something. I have an announcement.
Okay, fine. Go ahead.
And I used to work in the restaurant industry, okay?
Okay.
And something that I didn't think, well, something that I found out a lot of my coworkers did not know was that we all got a raise on the 1st of January. And that's something I would love to tell all of my fellow Missourians who are cash-tipped employees, that we all got a raise on the 1st of January, and that they should look at their paycheck, their last paycheck, you know, it's the, 12th, 13th
yeah.
of January.
Right.
We should look at our last paycheck and to see if we got that raise. And specifically, the raise I'm talking about is the increase of the federal, not the federal, but the state minimum wage for cash-tipped employees.
Yeah, now, if I'm not mistaken, in Missouri, now correct me if I'm right or wrong, is that the one that was 15 cents an hour?
It was a 15-cent increase, yes.
Okay, that's an hour, right?
Yes.
Okay.
So let me explain for a second.
Hello?
Yeah, so specifically it means that let's say that you're working for a restaurant or something like that,
mm-hmm.
and the restaurant has an annual gross income of $500,000, okay? And that's not too difficult to make. Like, let's say, you know, an average restaurant can make about $5,000 on a Saturday night, and that's around $300-something thousand just on Saturday nights for an entire year, for 52 weeks.
Okay.
So most of these types of places can make, you know, $500,000 for their annual gross income. That means that if they fall into that little bracket of $500,000, that means that they have to pay their employees 50% of the minimum wage. Okay, so a lot of my coworkers, and a lot of different people work in the restaurant industry as servers or anything that works off of cash tips. They need to know that because a lot of these places of labor do not actually have that sign up. And that's something I'm not going to name my last employer over the radio.
Well, and also, Kevin, that's something, I think that's a subject that you and I need to talk about, okay, before we even get into it on the air so that we can figure out a way to be able to fit it into our environmental circumstances, all right? I do think the topic that you're talking about is important. In fact, I was one of the persons that stood in solidarity with the fast food workers when they had a strike back here last year. So I do have some concerns about it, but not this particular show. But why don't you get in touch with me, and then we'll talk
okay.
about that, okay?
Absolutely.
Appreciate your interest, though. All right, hang in there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah. Going back to our part, Kansas City middle class is shrinking since 1980s. The share of the households with middle class income dropped from 40% to 38%. You know, and I know some of you are going, "Why are we even listening to all this stuff?" Well, I personally believe that the environmental circumstances that we find ourselves faced with have a lot to do with a low-income community that is cash-strapped. And when you're cash-strapped, that prevents you from doing a lot of things that you would normally find yourself wanting to do. For instance, I have a problem in Wyandotte County with dogs running free on the streets. You know, and anybody that's ever been over there, you know that there's a problem with loose dogs. They just roam in the streets. I've been bringing this up at different organizations that I'm with. I brought it up to an NAACP meeting, and one of the persons there said that loose dogs is not a civil rights issue. Well, you know, I beg to differ. When you have created a transportation system that is being earmarked as the best thing since blue suede shoes as far as people's ability to be able to get to the employment opportunities in the metropolitan area. But when you have to walk from your home And like this one lady told me that every time she looks out a window, she never sees a person walking anymore that doesn't have a stick or a club in their hand. And the reason for that is to fend themselves off from these wild ones, these pack of animals that they're being allowed to run around on the street. Well, as an environmentalist, all of that, every bit of that contributes to the overall climate that the people we are engaged with live in. And so, you know, just like being concerned about the amount of emissions coming from a coal-fired plant and its effect on the clean air that we breathe, you know, I think we need to be equally as concerned about the mental health of the people who live in these low-income communities also. And that's across the board. You know, it's not like I'm saying we talking low-income and I'm picking a neighborhood out that's in a certain particular section of a county, of a section of town. Our low-income people now go across the board. That's what this report is showing. And so, again, it comes back to why I thought that report had some merit. There was a lot of our environmental organizations were party to this group when this report was being written. So, and I know that they were paying a lot of attention to it because it had a lot to do with the kind of services and programs they're able to offer. The one thing that came out of it that I was very excited about, because I had showed my behind, like I always do at some places, because I felt like too many organizations were forming, nonprofit organizations were being created in our low-income communities. And they always providing the service, and that doesn't create sustainability. And without sustainability, it interferes with your growth processes. And even though I know we have to have nonprofit programs, I'm 101% supportive of that. I also feel we need to have some programs that are creating employment, that are creating income, that are creating some sustainability, so that eventually, because what happens right now, when those nonprofit programs grants run out, the program ends. So whatever people you were able to hire during this brief period of time that you had this grant no longer have a job. I want you to know Kansas City's poster boy. The reason I call him the poster boy, because his picture was shown in the paper about how he had benefited from the stimulus package, the stimulus money. He was hired, educated, trained, was going around town installing smart meters in people's homes. They ran an article in the paper with his picture and the whole bit. I'm going to try to get in touch with him and have him on the air so we can talk about it, because I talked to his grandmother, and he's unemployed. He doesn't have a job. And that's a prime example of what I'm talking about. While the money was flourishing, they just was really excited about, look at what we done. We just took us a nobody and turned him into a productive citizen in America. But he's unemployed. No job. That money was used to benefit their purpose of getting those smart meters inside people's homes. You would think that once that ran out, the man's been trained, that you would have a job for him working in your company. But I just talked to his mother. It hasn't been a week. And I asked about him. She said he's sitting at home without a job. Now that to me is like the problem in West Virginia, an American tragedy. And see, it's going to take us as American public to start figuring out solutions to those kinds of circumstances. That's why this is important. So I exploded at this group when they was here in town getting some figures and facts together over at the Kaufman building. That's where they were. And it was about that issue, about them forming too many jobs. So what they came back with, this is the summary, and I feel like that within this summary, maybe some of what I said that day was taken into consideration. The analysis of the equity in the Kansas City region shows that community of colors are driving the region's population growth, making their economic inclusion essential in the region's success. While the region demonstrates overall community economic strength, wide racial gaps in income, health, and opportunity, coupled with declining wages, a shrinking middle class, and rising inequality, places his economic future at risk. To secure a prosperous future, the region leaders must take steps to build a more equitable and sustainable economy. Critical strategies including good growing jobs, connecting unemployment and low-wage workers to job training and career opportunities, increasing access to economic opportunities throughout the region. Implementing these strategies would put all the region's residents on the path to reaching their full potential, bringing shared economic prosperity region-wide. Now, that's what I'm talking about. That's what I'm talking about, is bringing the prosperity factors to the total, to bear. We need to be able to not only get people trained, but to get them trained in such a way that they can continue to prosper when that training money has left, when the money they were hired to work with is no longer here. Here we have another caller.
Yeah, we've got Maurice, and we've just got a couple minutes before we have to.
Just a couple. I'm glad you called, Maurice. I just want you to give us the announcement of that meeting. Exactly where it's located, just real quickly what it's about, because we only got a couple of minutes, pal. Go ahead.
Okay, it's about the benefit compensation package for the sick people at the Bannister Federal Complex. And the meeting is at IBEW Hall 301 West 103rd Street at the IBEW Hall, 10 o'clock in the morning is the first one, and 6 p.m. is the second one. Second meeting.
Okay.
And you can file your claims, learn about where your claim is. That's what we're doing tomorrow.
Okay. Those of you out there who heard my last show, you heard Maurice talking about this. I just wanted to get it confirmed again and make sure we made a pitch for him to make sure you tell folks about it. Last time we had some folks out there to call in that were themselves former workers. And so I want to make sure that you, again, are aware of the fact that that's going to be going on. Tell your family, tell your friends, and let's get some people over there. That's tomorrow, right, Maurice?
That's right. Tomorrow morning, starting at 10.
Okay, buddy. Appreciate you.
All right. Thank you very much.
Yeah, take care.
Richard, do we have any calendar announcements other than Maurice's thing we need to mention?
Just more recent. The only other thing is I wanted to talk to those IBE workers.
Yeah.
And tell them that I'd like for you to if possible make contact with us here. I'd like to hear y'all's side of the story of what's going on with these environmental circumstances. I'd really like to give you a voice. So if you hear me and you're aware of it and you want to be able to be heard, contact this station. Go to Eco Radio and leave us a note and we'll get with you.
Okay, Richard, we're just getting ready to wrap up the show, and I do want to remind folks, I mean, I encourage people all the time to listen to KKFI, so Sabor Latino is coming up next. But if you're into more environmentally oriented programming, our sister community radio station across the state, KDHX, in St. Louis, is starting their program, Earthworms, their local environmental show, at the top of the hour in just a few minutes. Also, again, I don't want to discourage people from listening to KKFI, but tomorrow night on another Missouri community radio station, KOPN in Columbia, Missouri, Mark Heim is going to be welcoming David Corton to the show.
That's a good one.
Yeah, and so we're looking forward to that. But again, we're not trying to encourage you to. We've got mic check going on at that time, as well as Counterspin. So. Those are both fine programs as well. Also, in terms of environmental programs, the program about the Raptor Preservation Project on Sprouts on Saturday, they've installed these 24-hour webcams inside an eagle's nest, and it's offering a whole new glimpse into what's going on and how we can learn and help to preserve eagles and other vulnerable raptors that out there and make sure that they're safe. Sabor Latino is coming up next. One other thing we're going to go out with. We talked at the top of the program about the chemical infestation affecting 300,000 people's drinking water in West Virginia. We're going to hear a piece from Feature Story News about that, And so do stay tuned. Again, you're tuned to 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
The Gazette first stumbled upon the story. We were getting reports of a funny smell in the air yesterday morning around Charleston, a smell of licorice, like anise, black licorice. It turned out that there had been a chemical leak along the Elk River at a company called Freedom Industries, which is a chemical manufacturing company. The chemical is called 4-methylcyclohexane methanol, which is what we know to be, according to the DEP, the Department of Environmental Protection, a sensing agent that's used in the processing of coal. The chemical facility is upstream from our water intake for this area. So at first, early afternoon, it was believed that the chemical had not gone into the water processing facility, and then it became apparent to the company that it had infiltrated that facility.
So is there a risk here that some consumers may have consumed this contaminated water before those advisories were issued?
That's kind of unclear from our standpoint. Yesterday, during an evening press conference, President Jeff McIntyre of West Virginia American Water wasn't sure exactly what time that water or that chemical entered the facility. They did say if any member of the public feels sick, please call poison control. Please go to the hospital. So that's kind of the word that's out on that issue.
And what's the outlook for ending the spill, cleaning things up, and making the drinking water safe again?
Well, that's not very clear. Mr. McIntyre said he wasn't exactly certain if the spill had stopped, but he believed it was contained. They can't provide a timeline at this point as to when customers will be able to use their water again. There's a question of what exactly this chemical does. There's not a lot of information we're hearing from the DEP and from the company on exactly the toxicity levels of the chemical. The material safety data sheets are just unclear. So it's all kind of a question mark at this point.
So this must be unbelievably concerning for the up to 300,000 people affected.
That is kind of the tone that we're getting from the public. They are concerned about the water issue.
And they face a weekend of not being able to drink the water or bathe in it?
We're really not sure. All of our reports say that the water company is uncertain as to when the ban will be lifted.
And you said that this chemical has some utility in the coal industry, and
yes,
one can already see in social media that clean energy activists are saying, well, this is just further proof that a West Virginia economy that's built on coal is a ticking time bomb. Is this incident, do you think, going to change the dynamic of the conversation underway in West Virginia about a coal-based economy?
It's possible, although I think the conversation about West Virginia's coal-based economy has been happening for a number of years. There have been many movements against mountaintop removal, strip mining, and also now we're seeing our economy become interested in natural gas. So coal is an evolving topic here in West Virginia. This incident certainly may add to that conversation.
Tune in, turn on, and drop in to the Uptown Arts Bar, 3611 Broadway, on Saturday, January 18th, and expand your consciousness as the Arts Bar presents its annual commemoration of the 1967 San Francisco Human Being, a gathering of the tribes grooving to the drummers, the music, the poets, the incense. And like magic, the psychedelic expansion of the mind returns Saturday, January 18th. $10 at the door supports KKFI.
I'm Dolores Huerta, and I have a message for every hardworking farm worker. You deserve to get paid every dollar you earn and have safe housing and transportation. This is the law. The U.S. Department of Labor's Wage Hour Division can help if there's a problem. Whether you're documented or not, the call is free and confidential. Call 1-866-487-9243.
A message from the U.S. Department of Labor, Wage and Hour Division.
Thanks for listening to Eco Radio KC on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.